Hi, I'm Poonam Patel, and you're listening to Improv Nerd.
Jimmy Corain's a nerd. Jimmy Corain's an improv nerd. Jimmy Corain's a nerd.
Oh, hey, everybody, this is Jimmy Corain, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, sponsored by my award-winning improv classes, The Art of Slow Comedy, where I really believe that if you want to be the improviser that you've always dreamed of, you need to play it real before you can be funny. And if you play it real, you're going to be even funnier. Now, my classes are limited to 12 people, so you get plenty of stage time, personal feedback, and those reps you need to become a better improviser. I have two intermediate classes starting September 8th and September 13th. One is on Monday, one is on Saturday, where we will focus on two-person scenes, which is the foundation of long form. Like I said, I limited to 12 people. To register, go to my website, jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com for more information on the Art of Slow Comedy. We are also sponsored by the good people at Hotel Lincoln. So the next time you're here in the city of Chicago and you are looking for a cool boutique hotel that's close to everything, right around the corner from Second City, it's not only improviser friendly, it's pet friendly as well. Check out the official hotel of Improv Nerd, Hotel Lincoln. We got a great show for you today. Our guest today is currently in the cast of Second City's ETC, Apes of Wrath here in Chicago, Poonam Patel. Poonam has got a great story. She's been in Chicago for about 5 years, and she's already on a resident company. It's Second City. Now, that is an amazing, amazing feat. We talk about her growing up in an Indian culture and what that means and how she uses that or not uses that in her comedy and how she plays Indian characters. We also talk to her about how she deals with her imperfections. So I think you're really going to love this interview. It's incredible that she's gotten so far so fast. So before we get to the interview with Poonam, last weekend I went to the Oklahoma Improv Festival in Oklahoma City. I had a great time. Went down there, taught some workshops, did an Improv Nerd Live. It was really a lot of fun. So Friday I flew out of O'Hare Airport and I was flying out United. So I was in the United Terminal. And if you've ever been in the United Terminal, it is huge. There's tons of walking. And my gate was gate 18. So I always pack my lunch when I fly because I don't know if you know this, but I used to be really, really fat. And so I'm on kind of a very strict food plan. And so I was early and I decided, my gate was gate 18. I saw gate 9. So I'm like, I'm just going to sit. No one cares, right? So I'm just going to sit in the chairs there, eat my chicken drumsticks, have my lunch and then walk the 6 blocks or half a mile, whatever it is, to gate 18. So I'm sitting there in the chairs and there's this woman. She's on her cell phone. She's got, some luggage in the chair and a big purse. She's talking on the phone for a couple minutes. I'm eating my chicken drumsticks. She comes over to me and she says, you look like a nice guy. Would you watch my bags while I go to the bathroom? And I always feel weird about that, but I also kind of, I felt honored. So I said, sure. She goes to the bathroom and I'm thinking, when she gets back, cause I'm curious about this because I have such trust issues and I think everybody's out to screw me. I really want to know why she, what kind of energy I was giving off or what her criteria was that I was a nice person and she could trust me with her purse and her luggage. So she comes back and she doesn't say anything. And I have to say, I'm expecting a thank you, but she doesn't even make eye contact with me. She just like the thing that happened 5 or 6 minutes ago, her asking me to watch her luggage, it didn't even transpire. It was very weird. She goes back and she sits there and she's talking on her phone and I my lunch is done and I'm about to, get up and go to gate 18. And then she jumps up, doesn't say anything, right? And she goes to the concession stand. And I'm thinking, You didn't say anything to me. You didn't ask me if I could do this again or not. And I am so codependent. I'm thinking to myself, I'm fucking responsible for her bags if anything happens to them, you know, because I want to get up and leave. I really want to get up and leave to leave them there because I'm like, I'm pissed off. First, she didn't thank me. Then when she didn't come back and want to thank me, I didn't want to engage in any sort of conversation and ask her about why she thought I was, you know, trustworthy. And now I'm really pissed because she didn't ask me and got up and went to the concession stand. So I'm looking over the concession stand. The line is like four or five. She's in line and there's like three or four people. And it looks like she's taking her time. And I'm like, she has no consideration for me whatsoever. But I don't want to leave because I'm thinking if something happens to these bags, I'm going to feel awful. I'm going to feel guilty, you know, like she's going to blame me. And then, you know, I had the one thought of like going over to her and going, hey, I'm leaving and waving to her at the concession stand. But I'm afraid that there's going to be some sort of confrontation. Now I'm just sitting there, you know, like a chump, you know, and I feel like a total pussy, a total weasel, a total wimp, whatever the word is. And she comes back with a bottle of water. And again, she doesn't look at me. She doesn't thank me. She doesn't acknowledge it. And I just get up with a huge fucking resentment and walk to gate 18. And, you know, my whole life, I look for resentments. I get it. I look for resentments, especially when there's like something really fun and I'm really proud of. You know, I'm really proud that I'm traveling a lot more to these cities to teach workshops and do an improv nerd. But I always got to find a resentment, a buzzkill before I go on a trip. So that's enough about me. Here you go. You're going to love this story. She's just a sweetheart and just it's just a wonderful, wonderful story. Here it is. Our guest, Poonam Patel. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah. Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd.
There's like a little sexual energy there, do you think?
Yeah, I feel like I have that with most people, but it's never really reciprocated, so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I feel like I'm not like trying to be cocky, I feel like I'm an attractive person,
yes.
But I like don't get hit on very often, and I'm like, I'm putting it out there.
Well, that's what I think so interesting about you is you have sexuality, you know?
Thank you.
and I think we talked about this over on the phone when we did the pre-interview about how plus size women, is this, I don't want to.
I mean, like plus size is a bit harsh.
Okay. How would you describe yourself?
I would describe myself as like curvy and like just a teardrop above average.
Okay. but you're not.
I'm not tiny. Yeah.
Not tiny,
oh, for sure.
You know, and you're not like. But the thing I love about you is there is this sexuality, and you're really you put it out there. You know, and I think of someone who isn't really curvy. Doesn't, you know, like, especially in comedy, kind of hide it. Even in comedy, I think the pretty women kind of hide it. Do you think?
Yeah, I think it's getting better. I think for a while, like, it wasn't seen as, like, funny or cool to be feminine in comedy. But now you see so many people celebrating that, you know, on TV, like, you know, on the Mindy Project, she's the girliest girl, but she's still smart and funny and hilarious, and you can be both. You know, in my current show, like, Carissa Bereca is the most feminine woman I know, and she's also one of the most talented and most hilarious. So it's nice that it's, you know, evolving into a place where you can be both, and you don't have to, you know, be a curmudgeon and wear, like, an oversized blazer to be funny. Though I do, but still.
So let's talk about your experience. And you, for people that don't know your background, you have an amazing story because you've been here in Chicago for 5 years and you've ended up on a resident stage. This is your third review, right?
It's my second one writing, but the first one I understudied. So
and
yeah, it feels like the third one.
You understudied for Adi Bryant, right?
Yeah.
And then you understudied for 7 months, and then tell us what happened after that.
And then the show turned over, and I had a month off where I was kind of like, I was still understudying for the touring company, and I was like, oh, what should I do now, kind of thing.
Because they went into rehearsal for the new show.
Yeah, they started process for the next show, and I didn't get it, which I was expecting because, you know, I didn't have that much experience. And going into it, they kind of are like, this is a great opportunity, enjoy it. It doesn't guarantee anything, which is a really...
They said that at Second City?
Yeah, and I kind of told myself that too.
That's very upfront, don't you think, for Second City?
Absolutely, yeah. And they were really transparent, but not in like a... like it while you got it, we're getting rid of you in 7 months way. They were, you know, just kind of like, you know, we don't plan that far in advance. Just because I'm sure, like, going into that schedule, you get used to it. And then, of course, it's, like, disappointing when you have to leave. But I think going into it, I was like, I'm just happy I'm even here right now. Like, I couldn't even believe that I was doing A.D. Bryant's parts. So, but, yeah, and then I had a month off, and then there was, like, a bit of casting change, and then Allison Riley at Second City called me.
So someone in the cast, I believe, got fired, right?
I don't really know the details of it, but I think it was kind of like a mutual thing, and it, you know.
So she had started the show, and she was
absolutely out. Yeah. Then, I think it just didn't work out with them, and then you know, she left gracefully, and then Allison called me and was like, "Hey, we want you to be in the show," and I was like, "What? Okay." And they're like, "You start tomorrow," and I was like, so I started process with them the next day, and the guys were from the previous show, so I knew them, and then the two women, Brooke and Carissa, Brooke Bright and Chris Bereka, were new, but they couldn't have been warmer and more welcoming, so it was pretty nice, yeah.
And it's interesting because Brooke Bright's husband, Josh, was your first improv teacher before they even got married when you were in college, right?
Yeah, at University of Florida, I was a theater minor, and I took an improv class because someone's like, oh, it's an easy A, it'll bring up your GPA. And, you know,
but title was like...
It was like improv / social and political issues, and I was like, all right, sure. but I was like, yeah, and I was, you know, a huge nerd, so I was always trying to bring my GPA up, and I was like, easy A, definitely. But he was my first improv teacher ever, and it was mostly like just teaching us like short form games for that first semester, but it was amazing, and I just like fell in love with it. And it was kind of cool to be in a place where like it's celebrated to be an idiot and not make sense most of the time. So, yeah.
But as a kid, were you kind, when you say idiot, can you explain that?
Yeah, like just kind of out there and loud, and maybe at times as a child I was slightly obnoxious, kind of an attention whore, just
an attention always whore.
Yeah, like always like wanting to be center of attention, which I mean now I feel like it works for me, but
you know,
back
why
then
you wanted to be the center of attention when you look back?
I don't know, I think that was just my personality, and I always like, I just loved like dancing and singing and like telling jokes in front of people. Like when I was younger, I would, I had like a really hot boy cut that I
What's
got.
A boy cut?
Like a haircut that a boy would have, okay. But I was a 12-year-old like pudgy girl. Uh-huh. But I remember my aunt took us to Vidal Sassoon in London, and I was like, well, I have to get something dramatic. We're at Vidal Sassoon, so I was like, take it all off. But it was like a bowl cut, but I thought I looked so good. And so I would always like pretend I was like these Bollywood actors and make up dances and have my parents like videotape me and stuff and like perform for our family, and like act like a boy, and like I got really into it. But yeah, I think I've always just like loved having attention on me. There's something very satisfying about
it.
Did
the Indian culture support that?
I wouldn't say they didn't support it. I think like it was just very jarring.
Indian culture.
Like for what I'm doing now. I think back then, like dancing is like a huge part of the culture, and I did a lot of like traditional dance, and I even like choreographed a traditional dance team in college. But I think you do that, you have fun, and then you like go become a doctor or like, you know, go into business or like be a lawyer or something like that. So I think now it's more prevalent, and so now they like see more Indians on TV, so they're like, oh no, Indian people do this too, it's not just
and
something other people do.
Why do you think we're now seeing more, not only Indian actors, but we're also seeing comics with a strong point of view and a strong voice? Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think, yeah, I'm not really sure. I guess it's just there's more out there, and I think as this like first generation of Indians grow up in America, they're like coming more out of like the traditional roles that they thought maybe they were growing up with, like kind of the plans maybe their families had for them. They're kind of seeing other people go out of it, so maybe they're inspired to as well. And I mean, Indian people are really funny. Like my parents are the funniest people I know. So yeah, maybe they're just like seeing it more, so they're realizing they could do it too.
So you end up in Chicago. I'll get it.
Yeah.
You finish college. You're a journalist major, right?
Journalism, yeah.
Journalism, and you end up in Atlanta for a job.
Yes.
Okay, and that job, you get laid off.
Yes.
And you call home, and what happens?
And they're like, it's okay, it's the economy. And they were very nice about it. But then I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. And they're like, well, stop wasting money in Atlanta, come move home. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. And I really didn't want to, but I was like, well, let me just go, like, take this time to spend some time with my family or whatnot. And then I kind of didn't know what I wanted to do, and I thought maybe I wanted to stay in journalism because I was working for, like, a fashion and apparel magazine. So I thought I wanted to, like, work for, like, Condé Nast in New York. So I went to New York for a week and stayed with my friend and, like, networked and, like, literally just, like, went and tried to get meetings with people at magazines. Like, I creeped this one lady out really badly because she worked for a trend forecasting company that I knew about. And the receptionist told me it was her birthday. And so I was like, well, Poonam, you have to take risks in order to, like, be seen sometimes. So I, like, went down to this bakery and bought this, like, super overpriced cupcake. And I wrote her a little note because I had, like, a packet of blank note cards that I would, like, leave people. It was, like, super creepy now that I think about it. And I was like, happy birthday. I'd love to meet sometime just to hear about your experience in the industry. And I had only talked to her through LinkedIn, and she sent me a message and was like, I don't know how you knew it was my birthday, but I don't think we need to communicate anymore. Yeah, so I was like, well, okay. Like, and so I went around New York, and I was like, I love it here, but I don't know if it's the place for me. I think I live my life at a more leisurely pace than people do in New York.
So your mom said something to you over the phone then?
Oh, yeah. And so then I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And she's like, oh, well, you always like comedy. Why don't you move to Chicago? Like, even if you just go there to, like, take classes for the summer or something. And I was like, okay. So I just packed up all my stuff. And
was that a surprise that they said that? Because
yeah, a little bit. Like, I had visited Chicago, and she knew I liked doing, like, improv. But I was, like, really surprised that she was, like, encouraging me to do that. Because it was kind of like a risky thing to do, you know, just to get up and move. Like, in the grand scheme of things, not, but, like, for my family and for me, who are, like, my parents are very about, like, do something stable, have a paycheck every week, like, you know, be stable. I was kind of, like, shocking, but I think it kind of, the fact that my mom was the one suggesting it kind of motivated me to do it even more. So I just packed up all my suitcases and moved here the next week.
Now, yeah. you have, on the Second City Network, there is a web series where you do a character. Is that based on your mother?
Yeah, I think it's based on a combination of my parents.
So people who haven't seen it, and describe the one, I love the one about sex, where you're talking about sex. So can you describe the character in the one about sex? Because I love to talk about sex.
Absolutely.
Even though it brings a lot of shame up, I still love to
talk it's
about
fine.
It. You like to talk about sex?
I don't really have much to say about it. But I don't mind. I mean, I'm interested in talking about most things.
Okay.
So, Neil Dandati, who's a good friend of mine, him and I decided to create this series called Chai Chat. And it's he plays a dad and I play his wife. And it's just these Indian parents. And we're just giving advice to our daughter. And it's like a straight-to-camera thing. And it's as if we're, like, kind of taping it to, like, tell her, like, this is how you do life. So one of the first episodes is, like, the sex talk. But it's basically just being, like, don't have sex. If you have sex, you'll die. So
can you just give us a little sample of how the character sounds?
Yeah, sure. It's like, your childhood cousin Chutki had sex, and next week her daddy died. She killed her grandmother for sex. Like, Which, it's like definitely an exaggeration because I don't even think my parents and I have ever even talked about sex before, but it's what I imagine they would say if we ever did.
So it was a combination of your mom and some other people?
And my dad, yeah.
Okay, but they never had that conversation about that, and they weren't that extreme about. Is that in how you were raised, or in the culture, or in because it is.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I think we just never talked about it. It was just kind of like something we just didn't talk about. I think a lot of Indian people are a little more conservative when it comes to that. And also, I wasn't having it, so there was nothing to talk about. I didn't lose my virginity until I was pretty later on in life. And by that time, I kind of knew what I was doing. I mean, who knows?
Did you lose it to an improviser?
No, not at all. I did not. No. So we just never talked about it. But, like, the mannerisms are very similar to my parents. Indian people do talk about, like, well, you know, this guy and his daughter did this, and this is what happened to her. And, like, oh, yeah, but if you do that, like, it's very, like, superstitious as well. There's lots of, like, old wives' tales.
Give me an example of one.
Like, if your palm itches or if you're hiccuping, I mean, someone's thinking about you.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a good way.
Okay.
But if you, like, are thinking a bad thought about someone and then, like, you stub your toe or you hurt yourself, it's, like, because you were thinking a bad thought.
That's not far from Catholicism.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of guilt involved in it.
My question to you is, like, how, because you do a lot of big characters, but
yeah.
You have not done any Indian characters at the ETC. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think, like, when I first started out in comedy, I kind of purposely shied away from it.
What was your thought?
I didn't want to come off like I was making fun of, like, my people, you know? And it seemed like it would be kind of like a cheap laugh, because it seemed like, in my head, that's maybe what people were expecting me to do. And, like, sure, I could go on and do an Indian accent, and people would love it. And it's not a bad thing, but I kind of was like, well, that's not all I want to be. I want to be a comedian first, and then I also am Indian, and that influences my voice. But I think with Chai Chat, I found, like, a good way to, like, celebrate it, because that was, like, really important to both Neil and I. It's like, we never want to come off like we're making fun of our parents or we're making fun of Indian people, because we are Indian ourselves, you know?
So how do you balance that? How do you make it, you know, because there is a stereotype. I don't care what it is.
Right.
There is a stereotype. We need to use the stereotype.
Absolutely.
So how do you do it and not make it a caricature?
Well, I think you, like, recognize that, like, okay, I'm basing it off my parents. My parents are also the smartest people I know. Do something with an accent, but don't make them stupid just because they have an accent, kind of thing.
Do you think that, I think of The Simpsons in a
yeah.
Do you think that right now, and I think it's going to evolve. I think anytime,
right.
Like, we get it, you know, like, diversity, we start to see different diversity, it kind of evolves. Do you think that right now, that there is, like, portraying as stupid?
Now I don't think there is.
5 years ago.
Maybe, but okay. I think, like, definitely now, it's nice also because you see Indian characters on TV that aren't just, like, a token Indian person on a show. They mm-hmm. just happen to be another character. But then it's nice because then you can accessorize that character with certain jokes about their culture as well. But, yeah, I think it's definitely evolving.
Also, you're known for doing, like, big characters. How do you... What is your process in coming up with a big character so it's believable, too?
I don't know. I don't know if I really have a huge process.
So how do you start with an idea for a character?
Sometimes it'll just be, like, a noise I made on mistake.
A noise you make
like,
on mistake?
Just, like, sometimes I'll, like, start an improv scene, and I don't know whether this is right or wrong or what, but this is what I do sometimes, and, like, someone will say something, and my reaction will just... It might not even be words. It'll be, like... Nah, nah. And then I'm like, And in my head, I'll be like, what the hell did you just say? But then I'm like, okay, well, you said it, so make it into a character now. And then I'll just try and, like, explore what that is. Or sometimes, like, I'll make a weird face in the mirror and be like, well, who's this guy? Like, you know? But, yeah, a lot of it is just, like, playing with it. And then I think I know I can be, like, I can get really out there sometimes. So I think, like, especially with the help of, like, great directors, I'm able to be like, okay, like, hone it in so it's not a caricature, and so it can, like, sustain itself over the course of, like, a 4-minute scene.
When you're putting up a set, okay, a set meaning, you know, you're working on a, mm-hmm. a review script, more scripted stuff, do you go out there and you do these huge characters, and then the director kind of says, okay, bring it down a little, bring it in, it's way over the top?
Yeah, I think 9 out of 10 times that's the case.
Really?
I think,
and how will they say it to you?
They'll be like, okay, really fun. We can't understand a word you're saying. Because I'll be like, nah, just random. Like, and it doesn't even make sense. But in my head, I'm like, this is great. It's going wonderful. But like, so they'll be like, just scale it back so we can understand what you're saying. One was like, okay, this is really funny, but we don't want you to look mildly retarded. So
that,
like,
note, they didn't want to look,
yeah,
mildly,
like, because I was like doing this like weird thing with my eyes, and they're like, okay, that's too much. It's like slightly Terry Schiavo, so, like, calm down. Too soon? No. But
Terry Schiavo?
Yeah,
soon?
I don't know.
It's never too soon. For,
yeah.
Terry,
yeah. it's never too soon for Terry Schiavo.
We're move into improv.
Yeah, sure,
and
sure.
I think we should. I'm terrified of doing big characters because, okay, I get in my head and I think, oh, I can't do big characters because I kind of came from the IO, Del Close, you mm-hmm. know, let's play it close to your vest. Which you kind of started out too, playing more of yourself. I would like to experiment and do like a big character, but I need, yeah, a little help to get there. So, what suggestion would we get? What suggestion would you give me to do that?
Maybe like as an exercise, like get a suggestion of an animal and encompass that, like personify that.
Okay.
Maybe.
So we want to take a suggestion as an animal? We want to get an animal suggestion?
Yeah.
To do our scene?
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Can we have a suggestion of an animal?
Tortoise.
A tortoise. A tortoise?
Yeah.
Okay. The tortoise. We know what that is, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's a turtle.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Oh, okay. Because I wasn't sure.
Okay. I was pretty sure, and I was,
okay,
asking you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. If not, we were going to fake it for 10 minutes.
No.
Okay, so you hear tortoise, which is a turtle.
Yes.
We've established,
yes,
that. Now, how do you break that down into doing a large size, a plus size character?
physically, I think of a tortoise shell, so, like, she's probably going to have a hunchback and, like, probably be a little bit, like, Filbert from Rocco's Modern Life.
Okay. What is Filbert from Rocco's Life?
It's like this dorky weirdo turtle character from this cartoon that was on Nickelodeon.
Okay. There's an age difference here.
Yeah. Is there?
Yeah. I don't think you can pick it up on the podcast.
Yeah.
Here, you can, but all right.
And then I might be like kind of nasally and slow because that's what I think of when I think of tortoise. Maybe I'll set us on an island because I think of the Galapagos. Okay. Also.
Okay. Okay, so me, I'm hearing tortoise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I hear like hard shell. Now, I want to play a positive character because the
uh-huh.
last couple of shows, it's all been like negative
energy.
Okay. All right, so I'm hearing tortoise, and the first thing that comes to me is like, it's a, like a shell, like nothing's going to bother me.
Okay.
All right? And how can I play that in terms of a positive character?
I would say, like, you're trying to not let anything bother you, but you're actually like, oh, God, I wish that was me.
Okay.
Like, maybe you're, like, you're positive in the sense that, like, you're jealous of someone, but not in, like, an angry way, but in more of, like, a FOMO way.
What way?
Like a fear of missing out. Like,
okay, FOMO.
Oh, sure. Man, I wish that was me. Like,
okay. Kind of like, okay, I'll try. Okay. And we'll let's go and discover it. Okay.
Okay.
You're
great.
Ready? Okay. Great. Girl.
Yes.
I put all the bags here. I think I'm really excited to. Are you okay?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm very excited as well. I just my body goes numb when I'm excited.
Yeah, no, I see that. So the guy at the hotel, the clerk, he said that all we have to do in 10 minutes, the bus will come by.
Oh my God, we're gonna get on a bus?
Yeah, we're gonna get on a bus.
Holy, I've never been on anything with more than two wheels.
Okay, so we're gonna get on the bus and then we're gonna go to we're gonna go scuba diving.
Oh my God, like underwater?
Yeah.
I've only ever floated.
Yeah.
This is a real first for me, Harold.
Well, they said that they have all sorts of things that in case, you know, you drown, and don't worry, the drowning, they say, is like 90% it happens. Oh. Two deaths a year.
Oh. Those numbers don't quite add up for me.
Well, it didn't add up for me either, but I'm
like,
just like...
90% sure it's going to happen, but there's only two deaths a year, so there's only like three people... 2.7 people that scuba dive every year.
I think that one was a small child.
So okay, yeah.
They round it up, actually. So they're going to pick us up and we're going to go scuba diving.
Great.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's just do it. I mean, we both beat cancer last year and we decided we're going to live our lives, right?
Yes, we are.
God, when you walked into that chemo treatment room, I never knew I was going to fall in love.
No, when you had that hooked up into your arm, I thought, she's not even going to be alive for our first date.
I know.
You were.
I know.
You were so beautiful.
I really
you
did.
You still are beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
You are.
I'm glad I decided to keep a shaved head.
I know.
It's a reminder, and I get a lot of free stuff because of it.
Yeah. Do you know when I first fell in love with you?
When?
When you started vomiting.
Oh, stop it.
You couldn't
it.
Get up the next morning. I said, you know what? I love her. And if something happens to her, I don't know what I'm going to do.
I am cute when I vomit.
You are.
It's just so dainty. You know when I first fell in love with you?
When?
Well, we were next to the vending machine.
And the one in the hospital?
The one in the hospital.
Oh, you never told me that.
Yeah, we were both there, and there was one pack of combos left. Yeah. And I was like, if this fucktard takes those combos, I'm going to stop chemo and just kill myself now, because if my life is so shitty that I can't even get the last pizzeria pretzels, I don't even want to live. And you took them, and you opened them up, you ate one, you hated it, you threw it away.
And you went in the garbage and got it.
And I got
it. Yes.
And I said, God, I hate that man. But that probably means I love him.
I didn't ever know that.
You wouldn't have known. I'm very sleuth.
You know, because our first date was so beautiful.
Oh, God. Movies. Just sitting in a dark room, not talking.
And I'm watching that big... buttered popcorn.
I know, because I'm plus size.
Yeah. No, you're not. You're not plus size.
You're curvy.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's more
polite.
Get
that out of your head.
That's
it's
polite
not plus
of you.
Size.
Thank you.
You're
that's
a
very
thick milkshake is what
well,
you are.
Well, I would say more creamy and delicious
right.
than thick.
Yeah.
Thank you. Look at my wrists. I'm not really as big as you think
no,
I
you're
am.
Not.
Thank you.
I love you, Denise.
I love you, Harold. Oh, Harold.
If anything ever happened to you, I don't know what I would do.
I'd want you to move on.
Oh, I couldn't.
No, you'd have to get some hot 22-year-old.
Oh, really?
I would want you to.
Oh, you know, if I died, I'd want you to feel sad for me for a long time. I wouldn't want you to get over me.
Yeah, but maybe I'd get a sympathy fuck out of it, you know? Who knows?
I mean,
Harold, I gave you my blessing. If you drown, which you might, there's a 90% chance you will. I would want you to want me to be happy. No?
No, you're right. I want you to be happy.
Thank you. If you could date anyone in the world.
Anyone?
Yeah, besides me, who would it be?
This is
a fun game.
Oh, this is.
This is a fun game. It's like an icebreaker.
We've been together for 8 months, and I feel like on this vacation, there's things about you that I've never known.
Like what?
About the combo story. I never knew that.
Oh, God, I know. That's one I keep close to my heart. You know, there's so many things I didn't know about you. Six toes.
Yeah.
Why didn't you ever tell me?
Because I was embarrassed.
Oh, don't be. It's more to love.
Oh, you know, a lot of people made fun of me. They used to call me Six Toes Harold.
Well, they're the fucked up ones staring at your
feet. Oh, I didn't know that back then.
Oh, Six Toe Harold.
So, let's get back to this.
Okay, yeah.
So, if I could date anybody.
Yeah, go on.
It would be, who's that? Cameron Diaz.
Really?
Yes.
She always looks like she's on crack. Just too much.
Oh, I would do Cameron Diaz.
Why?
I loved her in What About Mary. When she had the jizz in her hair, she seems like she's...
That's what you loved about her in What About Mary?
Yes. I played that scene over and over again.
I mean, I know people thought that was funny. It just doesn't seem realistic.
Who would you?
Oh.
If you could date anybody.
Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi.
I love him. This is
what?
Real. This is real. There is something about him that I find so attractive.
What is it?
I don't know. His beady little eyes, and he's a good actor, and especially when in Con Air, when he's like Hannibal. I'm being completely honest right now. There is something about him.
Oh my God, I am finding you so attractive
right
now.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you.
That really turned me on.
Oh,
come on,
Harold.
I've never seen you so excited.
Oh, I know. You should be insulted.
And so why?
I mean, I get excited about you, but no one will get me as excited as Steve Buscemi does.
Why don't you just close your eyes?
Okay, don't kiss me.
And just imagine, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that scene from Con Air.
Oh, my God. Am I Nick Cage?
You're Nick Cage.
Okay. That doll is for my daughter.
Right.
Okay.
And I'm Steve Buscemi.
Okay.
And I'm coming over to your house right now.
Okay, are you being wheeled in like you were in the movie?
Yes,
okay,
I'm being wheeled in,
oh
yes.
My God, okay.
And I've got that Hannibal mask on.
Okay, yes. Whoa, mama.
Yes.
Whoa, mama.
Now open your eyes.
I would let you kill me.
Really?
Yeah. That's how attracted I am to you right now.
Oh, my God. Let's stay here and have sex.
Okay.
All right.
You don't got to convince me.
Okay.
Oh, well, will the tour guide know?
Oh,
should
it doesn't
we tell
matter.
Him?
No, it doesn't matter. Would you want to tell him?
I'll tell him why. I don't want him to get suspicious.
Okay.
I like being honest. You know I'm a bad liar.
You're being honest. Hi, this is Harold, and we're in room 311 here.
Yeah.
And we're gonna be making love. We're gonna be making love.
It was a spur of the moment decision. We don't want you to think we're standing you up.
No. So we'll go to the later scuba session.
Yeah, like in like the one in 30 minutes.
Okay. No. Okay. Great. We've got 30 minutes.
Okay. Let me just untie my nightie.
Okay.
I'm so excited. God, this is the first time in the 8 months we've been dating that you're going to see my naked body.
It's the first in mine, too.
Oh, my God. I thought this was going to be a lot more awkward than it actually is. But I guess
naked.
I can tell. That was really fun.
Was it? What
yeah.
was fun about it for you?
I love any scene where you learn like a history about people. And I love any scene with, like, anecdotes.
Okay.
Because I know, like, the big thing is, like, show, don't tell. But I like telling, too, sometimes.
Right.
But I like making up a history for someone.
Okay, so there is a rule that always, show, don't tell. So in that scene, there was a little telling, not showing. And why was that okay?
Because I think it was, like, it helped create and evolve the characters throughout it, I think. Because... Mm-hmm. We could have done like flashbacks to like each of those stories, but sometimes I think like lines can land harder when you're telling an anecdote from like a history of a character.
And you said at one point, let's go to the do the scuba. Did you want to cut to do that to the scuba? Was
no.
that your instinct? Okay.
No, I hate like floating on stage. I always feel.
What do you hate about it?
I don't know. I feel weird, and like I know logistically it doesn't matter because it's improv. But I'm like, I don't swim like this. Like when I swim, like I don't even know what I look like, and I feel like I'm like then I like the water is so thick all the time. Right. Like, I just don't like it.
And then there was one part where you said, "Don't kiss me." Was that
yeah.
like was that coming from the actor or was that coming from the character?
I think both.
Really?
Well, I was like, I've never had an on-camera kiss, and no offense to you, but I would like wanted to be like, like no offense to you at all, but
right.
like I just imagine it would be like on like some crazy movie or like some crazy scene in a TV show or something.
Okay. Because I was like, when you said that, I was like, okay, well, it sounds like that's a boundary, and I felt shame, you know, like. Oh, not that I was even, maybe I was subconsciously thinking about it, but I was like, okay, she doesn't want to go there. So I was like, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. I think it's like also, like if it's someone, I think especially with improv, like I'm the type of person that feels comfortable with people easily, but I think I have to like perform with them for a while before I would probably kiss them
so
on stage.
So no one's ever kissed you on stage?
Chris Witaski has kissed me on stage, but he's kissed everyone on stage because he's an extremely sexually charged person.
Right.
So he would like write it into scenes, like, okay, and then I'm gonna kiss Poonam, and I'm like, this has nothing to do with the scene.
Okay. And then there was another part where you're like, oh, this the Steve Buscemi, and you're like, well, this is how I really think.
Yeah.
Was that more of the character, or was that more of you?
No, that was a sneak peek into my brain. Like,
okay.
There's something about him I don't know, I find very attractive.
Okay. My question is, why did you feel you needed to say, this is
yeah.
honesty, and just weave it into the character?
I kind of like doing that sometimes, because I don't know if it's necessarily breaking the fourth wall, but I kind of like, the audience will make assumptions about you, but like I kind of like letting them know something personal about me. Because, like, if it's through a character, I think they assume it's a part of me, but they don't know what actually is and what isn't. But, I don't know, sometimes I like just doing it. It's fun for me.
What did you like that we did in this scene?
I liked, like, how in love we were, despite all the adversity. I felt like we stayed positive, even though we dealt with a lot of dark things.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like doing that. I love not purposely going into dark places, but if you happen upon them, not shying away from it and not apologizing for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think like laughter is an amazing reaction to get. Sometimes when I'm on stage and I get someone like, ooh, I sometimes find that kind of satisfying too. Because to me it's like, it's okay if I say it's okay on stage,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
And what could we have done better?
I mean, I'm sure I could have been a little bit more physical or whatnot, but I mean, I never really think about scenes that way. I just think that's what happened, and I liked it, and now it's over.
Okay, so
yeah.
We have a lot of guests who say the same thing. How do you then, if you say that, how do you learn? Like, because, I mean, you didn't, Second City just didn't drop out of the sky. You had gone to I.O., you went
right.
to the conservatory, you were on independent teams here in Chicago. How do you get better then if you can't, after doing a show or after doing a scene, say, hey, I could have done this, I could have done that?
Absolutely. I think I look at it more like from a larger perspective as far as like patterns I follow and like challenges I want to give myself. So like a pattern I follow is playing like low status, and I find myself doing that a lot. So like lately, sometimes in sets, like a challenge, I'll be like, well, try and play a high status character this time. And that's like a note I'll give to myself. And I appreciate feedback from anyone, but I think also it's important to like not overanalyze things, because for me personally, I know it works for some people, but for me personally, it takes the fun out of it and it gets me in my head. And just in life in general, I try not to be too hard on myself about things, especially in this industry. So
yeah, so I totally agree, because I
yeah.
sort of overanalyze everything and just suck the fun out of it. But how do you find out that those patterns? How are you, like, does someone come up to you and say, hey, you know, you should really play more low status, or are you just taking that inventory yourself?
I'm taking the inventory myself and just trying to be, like, hyper aware of it. But then also, like, you know, I'll get, like, assignments sometimes in process for directors, or, like, in other, like, when I was on a Herald team, like, coaches would give me great notes like that. Like, one of the biggest notes I've gotten, it's not really a note, it's like, you always play big characters. So, like, this process, it was really important for me to not only do a scene where I was closer to myself, but, like, find joy in that as well. And I did it. Yay! So, yeah.
But you seem like you have a lot of joy in your life anyway. You seem like very happy. Is that,
yeah,
is that true, or is there sadness underneath it? Or
I mean, I'm human. I have my sad moments for sure. Uh-huh. But yeah, I think I'm like so lucky. Like sometimes I like look at my life and I'm like, this is a dream. I can't believe I'm doing this. Mostly because like having a 9-to-5 and like being in a 9-to-5 where you're like, oh my God, I can't sit here any longer. And now like this is my job, and I don't ever have to wake up early for anything. And I get, like, cool opportunities to do things like this. I think I definitely, like, feel sadness and feel angst and anxiety sometimes, but I think being, like, in a career like this gives you great perspective every day, too.
It happened so fast for you. I mean, 5 years you're on a resident company. Do you feel like you deserve it? How do you balance that out? You know, like, I deserve it, or it's such a great accomplishment. How do you get peace with that?
Absolutely. I think the first time I understudied, I was definitely like, holy crap, what am I doing here? And especially like
you didn't feel like you belonged?
I did because I got the job, right. But I think I was just so nervous and I was like constantly second guessing myself, especially like, you know, trying to fill the shoes of someone like Adie Bryant is an extremely daunting task. But then I kind of learned that, like, anything you go into, like, you can't try and be as good as someone else. You kind of have to be your own version of it.
How long did it take you to be your own version of that?
I would say I did the show for probably, like, 2-3 months before I felt, like, ownership to, like, add in little bits here and there. But I think being in, like, an amazing ensemble also helps mm-hmm. that comfort level.
So getting back to the scene, I was really happy that I stayed positive through the whole thing. Now I come back going, that's not how I play. In the judgment I have about my performance, mm-hmm. I thought you were great. I go to myself, I was jokey, I was a caricature. That's what's in my head. What did you?
I didn't think so at all. Felt like you seemed pretty close to yourself, like it didn't seem like a huge character.
Okay.
Yeah. One thing I did notice that I liked was you made like a lot of eye contact, and that's something I don't really do.
Right.
I feel like sometimes I'm very like presentational. But that does like help evolve a scene and like evoke different kind of reactions.
So my uncomfortability, my judgment of myself, is that because I'm getting out of my comfort zone?
I don't know. yeah, I mean, maybe. I think we always, like, see ourselves with, like, an insane world lens. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what we see is 90% of the time not what other people see when it comes to, like, a lot of the negative things. Like, I always say, like, every person has, like, varying degrees of body dysmorphia as well. You know, like, you look in a mirror and you're like, oh my God, I'm getting this zit right here. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? I don't even notice that. So I feel like that applies to like improv too. Like everyone's just enjoying it, you know? So I don't think anyone, I certainly didn't think that.
Do you ever have the perception thing where you have a really shitty show in your uh-huh. head and then you come off stage and people say, oh, that was great. You were the favorite one in the cast. I really loved what you did. Do you ever have that?
Yeah.
I don't know. What is that? You're getting some feedback down. Okay.
Yeah, all the
Sorry
time.
About that.
Oh, no, it's fine. That does happen. Or, like, it'll be a really quiet crowd, and I'll be like, they hate it. They hate me. What's happening? And then they'll be like, oh, my God, I've never been to Second City. This was the most fun. And you're like, okay. which is really nice about the job.
Do you blame them? Do you get angry at them?
Oh, yeah, all the time. No, we call, sometimes we call the audience garbage audience, but for a lot of, but what I've learned is sometimes just because people aren't loudly and audibly enjoying themselves doesn't mean they're not engaged. And I'm like a very loud person, so that's how I like communicate. I'm like, you're not making noise, you're not alive, but one thing I've learned just being there is like sometimes like Sunday, like tonight, it might be a quieter audience because it's God's day and, you know, maybe they're not drunk. So, yeah.
I wonder how the show's going to be for you because you've kind of warmed up.
Yeah.
You had a great interview and, you know, they're going to drive you over there and you'll be like, I'm ready to go.
I'll fall asleep. This might have taken it all out of me.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you saved it for me and, you know, and Second City audiences.
They'll be fine.
Well, you've got other people to carry.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's turn the house lights on, Joey, and then we're going to take some questions from Boonham here. Just a quickly show of hands back here. Great.
Yeah, I was wondering how it feels now that there are new people on the EPC cast and you're kind of the one that they look up to.
I don't know if anyone looks up to me per se, but it was nice this process. I felt like I was like a lot more confident going into it. I think last process I was like still trying to figure it out, and it's nice to like change it up and have a new cast, and like those people have a lot of experience too. Like Tim Ryder toured for so long, has been working in the building for so long, so like I learned things from them as well. But I think definitely the second time around, like just pitching my ideas, whereas maybe first process, I was like, I don't know, maybe this, it's a lobster, it's dumb, let's not do it. This time I'm like, I got this great idea where I'm gonna play a lobster. And I think like just presenting it with confidence like helped me be more successful this time around too.
Great, another question? Yes, right over here.
Hi.
Is
there anything that you're specifically aspiring to in your professional career? Like, is there anything that you're like, ooh, this would be the golden nugget for me, or are you just kinda enjoying your ride?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely enjoying where I am, but, you know, like every couple months, I'm like, what am I doing with my life? I think my dream job would probably be to work in television and to, like, write and produce my own sitcom, I think. Yeah.
Great. Another question? Right here.
Yeah. So what do you, just from like 5 years ago or, like, starting out, like, what do you feel like, I guess, mentally has changed about the way you approach comedy?
I think like confidence and celebration are the two biggest assets to comedy for me. Like, I think even if I have like a half thought out idea, just presenting it confidently has helped me a lot. And I think like celebrating the little things about me that I used to be insecure about has helped with my comedy, because I feel like self-deprecation is gold on stage.
What was something that you were insecure that 3 years ago you wouldn't share, but now it's, you use it for your comedy?
Yeah. Well, I have like super thin hair.
Okay.
And now I make jokes about how I use Rogaine all the time.
Do you in real life?
Yeah. Okay. I use right now I'm using Rogaine. I'm using Nioxin shampoo and scalp therapy conditioner, argan oil, and sometimes I give myself coconut oil massages.
Now, for the people on the podcast,
yes,
your hair is very, very slightly thinning right at right here at the top, right?
Thank you for noticing. I mean, these lights are also like super bright, and I haven't washed it today. I mean, the greasier it gets a little thin, but that's why I have to change up my part as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did that really, were you, okay.
No, it's fine. It's funny.
You know, how do you, because I would imagine at one time you were, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, and you probably did all sorts of things to cover it up. How does it that then you just one day wake up and you're at peace with it? Not only are you at peace with it, but you're willing to make fun of it.
I think making fun of it helps you become at peace with it, because you realize it's not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can make a joke about my thinning hair, then it's really, like, not the end of the world, because I can joke around about it.
And how does that help other people, do you think?
I mean, I hope it makes people feel more comfortable about what, you know, quote-unquote flaws they have.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if I had, like, super thick hair, I probably wouldn't be who I am. Right. You know, like, I've focused so much on growing this hair, and it's my hair, so, and that, like, every single tiny component of me makes me who I am, so, and I'm happy with that.
Great. Another question, right here.
Good question. you mentioned earlier about getting in your head in a scene like that. When you find yourself in that situation, what do you do to get out of your head in the scene?
I try and, like, honestly just say what I'm thinking. Like, there's been times in scenes where I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing, help me. Or, like, I'll be like, I'm sorry, I wasn't even listening, because I'm human, and in a perfect world, I'm a perfect improviser, and I listen to every sentence, but, you know, I'm human, and sometimes I'm thinking about something else, and I don't, so I feel like I just try and find the most honest thing to say, and that usually helps.
Great, we had a question back here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Hi. What are the things creatively that you like about something that's scripted versus being able to improvise?
Yeah. I think improvising towards a scripted thing, which is what we do at Second City, is amazing. But I think with improv, it's freeing because there's no pressure and it feels like extremely organic. But then with sketch, there's so much discovery over a long period of time. Like a sketch you could have done 100 times. One night you say a word a different way and you crumble in laughter just because you said it a different way. And I've really learned to appreciate like the art of like crafting and like timing within sketch, and I feel like that helps with improv as well.
Great, we got time for one more question right here.
Oh, I was just going to ask about, you know, being a journalist, as a professional journalist, you know, how does that help your writing, you know, at Second City?
Well, I'm like really obsessed with grammar, so I feel like my scripts are always perfectly, like, you know, punctuation and all that. I think it helps because I've always really enjoyed writing and creative writing, and like being a journalism major, you have a lot of creative writing classes as well. And just like an expanded vocabulary and just using like different metaphors. Like I love puns as well. And like just using language as an art has helped me with writing comedy.
This has been so much fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
What is one thing that you would, what one piece of advice you would give to somebody starting out today in improv in the comedy world?
You can't be funny without fun.
Can you explain it just a little? Because I still struggle with that.
Have fun first and foremost, and even if nothing you're saying is funny, like having fun is contagious. You know, and if you think about the word funny, it has the word fun in it. I don't know what that says.
Yeah. Delightful. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Let's give a hand and a thank you.
Thank you.
And there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. Now, if I'm calculating correctly, that's episode 97. We are three away from 100. And if I'm off by one or two here, no big deal. I loved what she was talking about with the hair. I love that. And I also felt shame about asking those questions, pushing it a little, but I also felt really kind of like, you know, when she didn't want to kiss me, not that I was going in for a kiss. Maybe I was, I don't know if, I think I probably was, but I feel a little, I felt a little creepy because I'm much older than she is. Anyways, I want to thank our guests from the Second City ETC, the cast of Apes of Wrath, Poonam Patel. What a great guest. I also want to thank our home base, the people that make us treat us like such rock stars, and that is Stage 773 in Chicago. Of course, my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. You wouldn't be hearing my voice right now if it wasn't for Dan. I want to thank you, Dan, for doing such a great job. Also, you got to go to my website, jimmycorain.com. Not only do I talk about the Artist Low comedy classes, but you have to sign up for my improv blog. It will help you become a better improviser. We also have my books, Improviser Better and Improv Therapy there, and Improv Nerd t-shirts. They make great gifts. They're really, really cool. Go to jimmycorain.com. A shout out to feralaudio.com. Oh, we love Feral Audio. We are not alone at feralaudio.com. It is a podcast collective. So check out feralaudio.com and the other great podcasts like Chelsea Peretti and Dan Harmon and Todd Barry, just to name a few. Also, we are taking over social media. I don't know if this has been in the papers, Maybe it's on the web. We are taking over social media. Improv Nerd is taking over social media. We have a Facebook page with over 8,000 fans and growing. Thank you very much. Like us. Go to that page and like us because it really helps with my low self-esteem. We're on Twitter, improv_nerd. Follow us. Is it follow us? Is that it? I'm not that social media savvy. Follow us on Twitter. Is that it? We need you to follow us. Also, we have a YouTube channel that Dan does a great job and Joe, who shoot the show each week, and they put on clips. You can see in video of our guests. It's a two-camera shoot. It's very slick and very cool. So go to our YouTube channel. Also, I want to thank our sponsor, Hotel Lincoln. But more importantly, I want to thank you for listening because we couldn't do this podcast without you. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome. Not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins. One day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pe in Spanish,
oh my gosh.
He spots his dear friend who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh my God.